Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green, and we are at saverlife.com. You can find previous shows here. You can find older interviews. We'll be adding a lot more of the older content in the very near future. And you can always email me with comments and questions. Love hearing from listeners, and heard from one this week in particular that was just touching. It was the entire reason that I started doing these radio shows, and really appreciated hearing from this listener who took the time to write a little bit about it. So I thought I'd read the email. It's not that long, and for those of you that haven't been listening very long, you may not know of some of the places that he mentions. For those of you that have been listening a long time, you may have been to many of these or all of these. But he says in this week's email, says, "I was disappointed not to hear you this weekend on the radio. A friend just told me you won't be on. I've been a faithful listener for 8 years, every Saturday and Sunday. I don't drink wine. I don't garden, but your show always was interesting and informative. I've brought wines to get-togethers on your recommendation. Every restaurant I go in, I count how many New York wines were on the wine list. I've introduced Dr. Frank's story and wine to a couple dozen people. I went to the Aurora Inn, had grape pie, and went to Anthony Road Winery, all from listening to your show. We live on an acre of land, half of which is now completely overgrown and wild because of your show. Herd orchards, the birdhouse, the list goes on and on. You've talked about so many places and events I probably would never heard of, let alone attended through the years. Just wanted to say what a great and informative program it was, and I'll be listening to the podcast just as religiously as your show. Good luck, and thanks for everything you put out there." And can't thank him enough for sending that email. I said, you know, it made my day, it made my week, it made my month, perhaps the year. I mean, this is exactly why I started doing radio shows 26 years ago, because there's so many cool things that we have right here in our own backyard. And with coronavirus and limitations on travel, people trying to stay safe and, you know, stay closer to home in many cases, we have these places all around us. And they're only 10 minutes away, half an hour away, maybe an hour, hour and a half away. But things that you can go out and explore, and really some just fantastic destinations for gardening, for food, for wine, for natural beauty, and for history here in our area. Love to hear from you. If you've been listening a short time or a long time and just want to say hello, email me, michael@saverlife.com. And again, tell me something that you've done fun recently, or something that you've enjoyed hearing me talk about or do an interview about. Michael@saverlife.com. And this past week, I have been fighting invasive plants as a part of just outdoor work, trying to avoid the heat. So, yeah, not during the middle of the day. But the Cornell Cooperative Extension, Monroe County, is going to be doing an invasive plants in New York gardens Zoom presentation this Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. And this is hosted by the Central Library of Rochester and Monroe County. So you sign up at least 12 hours in advance so that they can get you on their list and send you the link for Zoom. If you haven't done this before, maybe find a gardening friend who has, you get some advice from them. You can also also check out the link at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Monroe County, and they have a support link for Zoom meetings, so you can see how to do it. It's really very easy, and there's not much that can go wrong. Just, you know, check out some of the information in advance, try it out, and you may discover that it's kind of entertaining. Oh, it's going to be a master gardener, John Nelson, who's going to be hosting this or presenting it. And you'll learn about some of the plants that you may have a few of now, which if you remove, you will have far fewer in the future. So on Instagram this past week, I do occasional posts for Save Her Life on Instagram. I'll be doing more in the future. But I do quite a few posts for Rochester Food Net. Save Her Life, this past week, I posted a photo of a, looks like a wild onion. It's actually called field garlic. And it looks sort of like a, I don't know, a chia pet with their hair straight up. And basically, this is kind of like a wild onion type of thing in the garlic family, obviously. So the flower head comes up, and it actually ends up, it's a ball of bulbs, which are starting to grow. So you look at this, it looks like it's got green hair coming out of it. It is kind of bizarre looking. And what happens is, it's a very stiff stalk by this stage when it's tall, and these are, it might be a 2 feet high, something like that. And so it's one of those things you do when you have a little extra time that you think, I wonder how many little bulbs are on that one plant, as it's a ball of little tiny bulbs. And again, they each have a little green hair coming out of them. Most of them do. So they're already starting to grow. And when they get heavy enough, when they grow enough, the thing falls over. And because it's a couple feet high and it's a very stiff stalk, it sort of automatically plants this group of field garlic about 2 feet away from the original plant. So, some social distancing for this field garlic plant. And, I was thinking, there's certainly at least 30 there. There's could be 50 or maybe 80 bulbs on this thing. And I got to post it on my website so you can see it. And if you have, check out Instagram, Save Her Life MWT, you'll find my post of the, I can email it to you too. Happy to do that. And you can try and figure out how many are in this bulb or a group of bulbs. So I broke them all apart. It's, again, just one plant, broke them all apart and then put them in groups of 10. And there were 164 bulbs on that one plant. And that's going to be a small nightmare. Some of them are pretty small. So in some rain or even maybe wind, they could, I don't know if they fall off sometimes, or once it hits the ground, they would break off and the rain might move some of them further away. But basically, you're going to have 164 more plants if you don't remove it. At least cut the top off, and even if you don't go and dig the bulb out, which you should do, because now you know where that bulb is, once you cut it off, it might be hard to find, because this looks like grass, so green stems. And you want to be very careful in digging it out of the ground, because just like the little bulbs that are on the kind of the flower head, underground, there are little tiny bulbs that break off of the main bulb. And this is the same with wild onion and garlic does this too, really. It develops little cloves, which are new plants. If you take a bulb of garlic and break off the individual cloves, you'll end up with 6 or 8 or 10, a bunch of different cloves. It'll all be new garlic plants if you plant them separately this fall. But if you miss them in the ground, and the wild onions are much smaller than garlic, they're little tiny things, and the little bulblets that are around the main bulb don't really look like bulbs. They're a different color than the soil. They're kind of tan. They're not quite bulb shape, but they sort of look like a really tiny clove of garlic. And so they're hard to find. So you dig them carefully, because if you take the main bulb and you leave 6 little bulblets, you were going to have six new plants where you used to have one, even though you tried to dig it out of the ground. And you can't pull these out of the ground. So the bottom line is you dig them now or you will have nightmares, because if the wild onion, or in this case field garlic, does go to seed and drops all those bulbs, you're going to have hundreds more to dig up next year. They'll probably take 2 years to get to the point of flowering. And, you know, at that point, if they did, those 164, you know, you got 164 of these little tiny plants, and they'll get bigger, but they won't be really that noticeable. They'll look kind of like grass. You won't really notice them. And, you know, that 164 in 2 years is going to be 26,000 plants. That's the number of bulbs that's going to drop in 2 years. And that's the 164 bulbs you have now times 164 for each of them in 2 years. And if you miss those 26,000, really almost 27,000 new plants that you have, 2 years later, you're going to have something like 4 million. This is exponential growth. And it's one of the reasons we need to be so worried about the coronavirus and wearing a mask and being careful, because exponential growth is it's almost hard to grasp how fast that can grow. So basically, with these little bulbs, you've gone from 160. Well, you've gone from one with 164 babies. That in 2 years, those 164 mature plants will produce 28,000 new little bulbs, and in which case 2 years later, you'll have 4 million. And if you didn't move when there were 28,000 of them, you're definitely going to move when there are 4 million of them. You don't want to have that. You don't want a garden in that yard. So, and it's pretty easy to miss, you know, the flowering bulbs on wild onions and things. And I've had some in my yard. Sometimes they come in with other plants. Sometimes, I don't know where they originate. You know, they just show up in your yard. And the wild onions are kind of curly. And so they grow very quickly in the spring. They grow faster than the grass in the spring. So you can see them. And if you break them off, you smell the onion. And that's the time to dig them out. Dig them out of the lawn. Dig them out of the garden. Dig them out wherever you find them, because of this exponential growth. And I've seen a couple yards where they didn't do this and where they have thousands of these, tens of thousands of these wild onions, or in this case, field garlic that I found. So beware, look out, and they will make your gardening life a nightmare, because you got to dig them all out of the ground. So definitely included. I don't know if they'll talk about them in the cooperative extension presentation, but they are definitely invasive plants. The invasive plants that I've been fighting this week are bittersweet. Don't ever plant bittersweet. Don't even buy it as a decoration for the holidays, for Thanksgiving. You don't want those seeds around you. And the birds are going to drop some anyway. So you need to get to know what some of the smaller, you know, seedlings look like. And that's why this presentation of Cooperative Extension is doing will be helpful, because it'll probably show some of the smaller plants and help you with identification. I've talked about it before, but bittersweet is distinctive in the roots, not in the leaves. The leaves are kind of innocuous green leaves, but the roots are orange. And so if you pull out a little seedling that has quite orange roots, you are almost certainly pulling out bittersweet and saving yourself a plant that will climb trees 60 feet high and smother them in the long run, and then spread underground wildly. You don't want bittersweet around. You also probably don't want wisteria. I've been digging out a lot of wisteria, and wisteria is gorgeous. I love the wisteria. The only way to grow it is the way Bill Valvanus grows it at the International Bonsai Arboretum in Rochester, which is one of those amazing places that just happens to be here in our backyard. He is one of the world's experts on bonsai, renowned around the world. He publishes the International Bonsai Magazine, travels around the world teaching about bonsai, and lives here in Henrietta, and has his own International Bonsai Arboretum. And so each year at Gardenscape, including this past March, which just barely got in before the lockdown and shutdown because of the coronavirus in early March, he brought in a couple of his wisteria. And bonsai are contained in small pots, relatively small compared to, he has some fairly large wisteria, but still relatively small pots. So those roots cannot escape without you seeing them. The problem is with a wisteria in your landscape, those roots will run and run. They're kind of wild. They actually don't run underground much. Obviously they have roots that do go underground, but when they send out runners and go off in search of another place to climb, they'll go 30 or 40 feet, and it's just like a rope, a straight line growing along the surface of the ground. It must grow a few inches a day. It's crazy, the length of these things. And then they start to root along the way, and then they'll find something to climb. And it's kind of weird, actually, because some of the ones I've pulled out have gone by a whole bunch of trees, and they didn't decide to climb it. Now, maybe they're looking for a certain amount of light, which that's my guess, that the light will convince them to go up. But they get like 30 feet. It's crazy. Often in quite a few different directions, they are a nightmare to catch up with. Absolutely crazy nightmare. So don't plant wisteria unless you're going to plant as a bonsai. And if you do that, you better take a class with Bill Valvanus or go see his bonsai. Because while it's a gorgeous plant, it is just a nightmare to try to keep track of and try to rein in. So I hope you've had some success keeping your plants alive through this heat wave in Rochester. Brutally warm, brutally sunny, and we love the sun, but not when it's 97 degrees and windy, and very, very little rain that we've had. Finally, there are some thunderstorms in the forecast for today and Monday, and then later this next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all thunderstorms. But thunderstorms don't always hit your area, so you may still have to do some watering. If you haven't done much watering, really watch the forecast today and then consider maybe doing some on Sunday, tomorrow, because the things are really dry. Again, the wind helps to wick the moisture out of the mulch, out of the soil. Mulch helps to retain more moisture, but again, the wind and the sun really suck that moisture right out of the ground. So again, this heat has been a huge challenge for the plants, but if you have basil and tomatoes, they're probably pretty happy as long as you've been watering them. If you've lost some plants in containers, join the crowd. Lots of people in this kind of weather lose them, because especially if it's a hanging basket in the sun, they'll get torched in one day if it's not really well watered. And you almost have to water those every day if they're in the sun. And even then you might lose them. So don't feel bad if you've lost some plants. I have, just because there's only so much watering one can do, and you know, it's the way things go. Don't feel discouraged if you've lost some plants. Some of them may recover. Some may be dormant. Grass certainly goes dormant, and you know, you can kind of nick the bark a little with your thumb to see if it's still green, if it's a shrub or a tree. It wouldn't do it on the trunk, but on some branch, you might be able to tell whether it's still alive and might leaf out again. But send me a photo if you're worried about something, it doesn't look right, you're wondering whether it'll survive. Some plants are tougher than others. Some of them you can cut to the ground, kind of, and they'll regrow. So again, send me a note. Email me, michael@saverlife.com, if you have some other, or some photos. If you're trying to identify whether something's a weed, whether it's poison ivy, which I found some more of this week, again, send me a note and a few photos. One of the other master gardeners posted a list of some other things not to put in your garden, and wisteria is on this list. Also, English ivy. I've been fighting that this week too. It's a pretty ground cover, but it climbs stuff. It's kind of pretty when it climbs stuff, but it doesn't coexist well with other things, and it will damage the bark. It'll damage your house, the siding and things. It's just too much of it. And there's some plants that I've tolerated, and now I've lost patience with them. I'm just tired of pulling it back. So in one area, I'm actually trying to get rid of the English ivy, which is not easy to do. It's pretty well rooted. They are shallow roots, but invariably pieces break off, and those will send up new growth, and I'll have to go back and remove it again. But hopefully not as much as this time. Also on this list is garlic mustard, which is actually a photo on the Cornell Cooperative Extension website about invasive species. This garlic mustard is very easy to pull out, but gets pretty tall, drops a lot of seeds, and right now is going to seed. So a good time to maybe try and catch it and get rid of those seeds before it drops more of them. It does smell like garlic. I don't think it tastes very good. Also on this list, Japanese honeysuckle. Honeysuckle, a number of them can be really invasive. Periwinkle is on this list of things to consider not planting, and I have quite a bit of it. It coexists better with perennials and shrubs than ivy or pachysandra. It doesn't tend to climb things very much. It's known for shade, but when it's well established, and we see this sometimes when trees come down, and you realize some plants that were in the shade still do really well in the sun. I've got an area of at a friend's house of myrtle, which is in full blasting sun and very dry sandy soil, and it's flourishing. But again, it's sort of grown out on its own. If you were to plant this, right now and try and water it, it would probably die. But it got to start in a shady area, and it's moved out into the sun. So it does, it is invasive. So you might think twice about myrtle, periwinkle, the same plant. Mint in general, watch out for that. Wintercress, which most people wouldn't plant. This often seedlings come in other pots or show up in your yard, and this guy grows all winter and then blooms very early in the spring, and when you touch it, the seeds just go flying. It's got little white flowers. It is edible, but once it flowers, usually things aren't as tasty, and it's not particularly tasty anyway. Purslane is another one. Purslane is, although I've let this one grow, partly because it's easy to remove, doesn't have a bad root system, Also, the purslane is one of the healthiest greens that you can grow in your yard. It's probably got more nutrients than things like lettuce and spinach and kale. I mean, it's super high in quite a few nutrients. If you look up purslane, P-U-R-S-L-A-N-E, like a jade plant, succulent texture, so kind of crunchy. And even the stems are fairly good. We actually were at the Genesee Country Village and Museum quite a few years ago. They pickled the stems of purslane, so pulled the leaves off, and then pickled the stems to have later. They're kind of colorful stems. They're reddish in color. So purslane is one that, I don't know if you want to plant it. You are starting to see it at farmers markets sometimes because it is such a healthy green. It tends to grow very low to the ground, although in my garden where I let it grow, it was so happy that it started to grow and try to outcompete the basil because purslane was growing like crazy. So I kind of like it as a ground cover in the vegetable garden. But not everyone might like that idea. Again, very, very healthy greens. Also on this list, there's common mullein, which I allow a few plants to grow in my yard each year. I just think it looks kind of cool and bizarre, and it gets about 6 feet high, and just the stalk with little yellow flowers and really furry gray-green leaves that generally are fairly low to the ground, and then the stalk just grows like crazy. And the one in my yard it's in a different location every year because it does seed itself. And I pull some of them out, let a few of them grow. But this time it's growing in a fairly well watered and lots of nutrients near the vegetable garden. So this thing is going to be a giant. So I kind of tolerate the common mullein. Purple loosestrife is something you want to avoid. This is something that's been an invasive species out in the wetlands and things. So don't get purple loosestrife. So these are some of the plants to avoid. One other one is barberries. And I've said this a few times before, but you don't want barberries in your yard or in your neighbor's yard or anywhere near you or where you walk your dog. Barberries have these crazy thorns that are tiny. And I've run into a couple people that have gotten blood poisoning from barberry thorns over the years. Even if you use winter gloves with liners, you can still get poked by these thorns. Luckily, the roots don't have thorns, so I attack them by trying to dig them up and avoiding cutting the tops, because if you cut the tops and people shear them all the time, you're cutting off all these little pieces that have the thorns. So if, let's say, you're pulling up leaves later under there, or you are walking through your garden, walking through the grass near where you've pruned these shrubs in the past, and there's little pieces with the little thorns, you're asking for trouble. And one other interesting study they did with barberry is that they found, and I don't know if this was Connecticut or I'm not sure, but in terms of Lyme disease, they found that the barberries provided a great haven for mice, and those mice are hosts for the deer ticks. And so there were far more ticks in an area that had this barberry that had gone wild than in other areas nearby. So that's reason alone to get rid of barberry. Be really careful taking it out. And again, don't head shear it. It's one of the worst things you can do in terms of spreading those little pieces around that have those thorns. There's a lot of barberry around. The crimson pygmy is very common, very small, and kind of burgundy foliage. You don't want it. I mean, if you got a beautiful, healthy one, I would say take it out, put something else in, and put some perennials in that space. They'll, if you want something small, But you don't want barberry around. Just and fall is a great time to replace plants. So if I had some barberry in my yard right now, even if I had 5 or 10 of them, I would dig them out, mulch those areas, and plant something in a month and a half, September. Be a great time to fill those spaces with other small shrubs or perennials, maybe annuals next year for some color, but get those barberries out. They're big trouble. Also been trying to get rid of some Russian olive, another invasive species, and kind of thorny to work around. It doesn't have actual thorns, but the small stems and things act like thorns, put tons of scratches in my arms. So that's a roundup of some of the plants to avoid, and again, Cooperative Extension will have a bunch more. I expect they'll talk about swallowwort. They'll probably talk about giant hogweed. That'll be interesting to see. Hopefully I'll be tuning in as well. It's this coming Wednesday, July 15th, 1 p.m., and again, it's hosted by the Central Library, so you have to sign up at least 12 hours in advance if you want to participate via Zoom. Again, Master Gardeners of Minot County's Cooperative Extension. And they have some other classes that are going to be going on. Zoom classes. They have one on gardening with native plants on July 29th. One on monarch butterflies on August 6th. So check out their website, and those are a few of their upcoming Zoom classes. If you know of some things that are going on related to gardening, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Charlie Zedek, Charlie and Judy Zedek have the Daylily Garden they're doing their annual open gardens only this month. They've often done some in August, but it's only in July, and it's only on Sundays. But there are still some Sundays left here in July. They ask that you need to wear a mask, practice social distancing. They're not going to have refreshments as they usually do, but they suggest you bring a water bottle because, of course, we've had some hot weather. But it's this Sunday. They're going to be doing it from 2 to 6 p.m. this Sunday and next Sunday and all the Sundays of July. You can see their daylily garden. A couple hundred daylilies in bloom, a couple hundred different varieties in bloom. And as I said last week, amazing to see the varieties. It's again, one of those treasures, like I mentioned, with the International Bonsai Arboretum, with Burgeon Water Gardens, with places like Palmeter's and Sarah's Garden Center and Linwood Gardens. We have some just amazing places here in our area to go explore. Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care, their nursery on 441. They've been doing a lot with native plants and doing a bunch of classes. So some cool places to go explore as you work out in your garden and maybe want to learn more about daylilies, or in the case of Linwood Gardens, it's tree peonies, which are done blooming, but they've been doing some open garden days. And it's like $20. You can go and spend many hours at Linwood Gardens and do some writing, bring a chair, bring a blanket. You can do some sketching. You can go with a friend and just hang out and see the vistas over the Genesee Valley. You can go to linwoodgardens.org, LINWOOD, linwoodgardens.org, and get more details on their open gardens. So that is a place where it is pretty easy to socially distance given the size of the property. It's in New York, which is southwest of Rochester, probably about 45 minutes to an hour away. So kind of between here and Batavia, Pavilion, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful, and it's on the west side of the Genesee Valley. So you're looking back at Geneseo from York. It's maybe 20 minutes from Perry, which is a fun place to go explore if you're out that way. So again, linwoodgardens.org if you want more details. And if you missed something I mentioned, of course you can replay this this recording, but also feel free to just email me, michael@saverlife.com, and send your questions, send your recommendations for things to talk about. We will be back with For the Love of Food and Discover the Finger Lakes today. Tomorrow is the Grapevine, 9 a.m. Stay cool and send me pictures of your garden. I'd love to see what's in bloom. One of my neighbors sent me a photo of his bee balm, which and yucca, which is in bloom, and it's got like a field of bee balm here in the city of Rochester. It is pretty extraordinary. Gorgeous, gorgeous flowers on them. So again, send me some photos of some of your favorite plants and, of course, the ones you can't identify. Hopefully I can help with. Have a great day. Mike Warren Thomas here at SaverLife.com.